I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Well, it's long overdue, but it's time to talk with Bill Kirk, the Lawrence Eagle Tribune reporter who checks in with us from time to time. Bill, welcome back to MSO.
Well, it's great to be back. Bill, thank you for having me.
Bill, you've covered that whole Northeast quadrant here in the last 9 months or so, and you've gone all over the place. And they've got you, you're zeroed in and sort of in one area now, so we can sort of focus on that.
Sure.
Maybe you can tell us where you are and what your headlines might be.
Well, yeah, like you said, I've been all over the Northeast quadrant there. I'd been in Andover for a few years. Became the editor of the weekly paper there for a while. And then I switched over and started covering Lawrence for a while, and now I'm covering Methuen. It's been really interesting. It's quite a newsy city. A lot going on there. And the big story, I think, not just with Methuen, but everywhere, is the COVID coronavirus situation. It's just affected every corner of everyone's life, as everyone knows. They've had a hard time getting their kids back into the schools. They started out, they were going to start out as almost like a normal year. Then they got some pushback from parents and teachers, and they started a phased opening, and it went to October, and so some of the kids came back in sort of mid to late October, and then in the last, I would probably say, 3 to 4 weeks, the COVID numbers in Methuen, in Lawrence, in Haverhill have just been skyrocketing. These were, if you follow the governor's maps, he's got the red, yellow, green maps where the communities, if you're in the red, that means you have the highest rate of infection. And those cities up in the Merrimack Valley were all in the red there for a while. I think Methuen still is. I was just looking up their numbers. They have last week's numbers, so I'm not sure what their numbers are this week. But at the schools, they decided not to come back to school until January 4th. I think the main reason, I mean, they've got a lot of COVID cases, but the main reason is they just don't have enough teachers. The superintendent said she had 20 teachers in every school. I think they have 5 or 6 schools there, but 20 teachers in every school, so that's around 100 teachers, were out. Either they were on quarantine, they had COVID, or they had daycare issues where they had to stay home to watch their kids because the schools that their kids all go to, wherever they may be, they're not necessarily in Methuen. They could be in Salem, New Hampshire, or Lawrence, or wherever. They have to stay home and be with their kids. So that's a real problem when you have that kind of absentee rate with your teachers. Not to mention the problems that they and other districts are having, really trying to keep track of the kids. If your kids are online, it's hard to know. I think a lot of the teachers have a hard time knowing, you know, when the kids are there. A lot of the kids leave their screens blank, so you can't see them. I did a story yesterday about the change in dates of where they're not going to go back to school till January 4th, or the hybrid. They call it the hybrid, so 2 days on, 2 days off. But I did a story last week about the absenteeism problem that they have, and it's really bad. The administrators are just frantic. They're just trying to figure out how to keep track of these kids because there's so many variables. You know, you got some kids that come in 2 days a week. You get some kids who are sort of special needs, that come in 4 days a week. Then you have some kids who don't come in at all, that are online. So they're having this problem of keeping track of who is where and who's doing what and how the technology hasn't kept up, I don't think, with that issue. So it's hard to, because in the old days, you were either physically in the building or you weren't.
Mm-hmm.
That was easy. If you came in late, you were marked tardy.
You know, I got to interrupt you here, Bill, because I heard I don't even really want to mention a town or the name of the math department head, but I heard about this, believe it or not, in the summertime, that looking back in the springtime, that was the major problem with this virtual learning, this distance learning, was trying to figure out who the hell was in the class, who was on Zoom and who wasn't, and that the attendance was the biggest issue. Because you couldn't get your lesson out, if the kids weren't there, and a lot of times they weren't. Now I haven't heard that, but I haven't pursued it either in the fall. Not only that, but also the fact you're mentioning teachers are out. I mean, I bet that's more of an issue than people are letting on.
Yeah, no, you hear. I follow a lot of Facebook groups. One of which a couple of Methuen Facebook groups. One of which is sort of the unofficial school group, and there are parents that come on there, and for some reason it seems they complain about the art classes a lot. I'm not quite sure why, but they have these art teachers that aren't there, and so the kid logs into class and they don't know what to do, or there's just all these different things that are going on. And I think that if you're a teacher and I don't know how they'd really do it. If you're teaching from home or you're teaching from a classroom, I know a lot of teachers don't want to go in because, right. I mean, you can't really blame them. They don't want to get exposed to this virus. On the other hand, if they're teaching from home, how do you manage that as an administrator? Because you're not just checking in on the kids. You're also checking in on your teaching staff. You want to know what they're doing and how they're doing. So it's a sort of a multifaceted problem, and the technology, I think the technology exists to teach. You know, everybody does Zoom meetings now. I mean, as long as you're in a Zoom meeting, there's your photo, they know you're there, you're checked in, but for some reason, this seems to be eluding the educational system at this point.
I think that's, you know, I think you bring up a really, really interesting point, Bill. The fact that it's in Methuen and they're dealing with it out in the open, and I'm gonna ask around because it just makes sense that this is so difficult, and it's just another gear being messed up here, throwing another wrench into the gears because. It was so close to getting past this thing, but here we are. First semester is almost over for these kids. So it's like, yeah, we're almost there, but man, this is another half year almost down.
Right. So, I mean, if you think about it, they've been out since March.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be almost a year. I mean, and one of the things that, I think the principal, maybe the assistant superintendent in Methuen said, and I'm sure this is true in other districts, I'm actually working on a story. A regional story for next Sunday about this subject on a regional level. And the issue is that if you get a certain number of absences, you start to fail. You can fail, or they give you failing grades, or they you get written up, and it can be a real problem, in terms of whether or not you pass or you could even graduate.
And that is a very, very sensitive issue. I dealt with that for all 38 years I was teaching math at Gloucester High School.
Uh-huh.
And the consensus is that I think by law, the teacher controls the grade, the administration or school committee, whatever, control the credits. And, we had something similar to that where the administration said, well, if a kid is out X number of days, then you have to flunk them. And as a math department, we refuse to do that. Said, no. If a kid is not in my class and still gets, all hundreds on tests, I'm not going to flunk them because the whole idea of teaching is to get people to learn on their own. But that's a story for another day. And it just makes it more complicated. I understand where you're going with that. And it's just another layer of stress that administrators, teachers, parents, and kids are all going through.
Right. Well, one of the quotes that I thought was interesting that one of the administrators said was that there, you know, there's sort of two issues. There's the, you know, are you there? Where are you? And are you, and the next issue is, are you engaged, an engaged learner?
Right.
And they really want them to be engaged learners. More, sort of goes to your point. The kid can get the hundreds on all his tests. He's not necessarily, you know, he's not always there, but he's a really smart kid, is a good math student. I think that's the kind of thing they're looking at here is just because you're marked absent, in this case, it doesn't mean you're not there.
Right.
It just means you're doing online.
Yeah, it's another.
And where even though maybe on that given day you should be in school because you do the hybrid.
Yep.
So let's say you're in for Monday and Tuesday, and then you go online Thursday and Friday. So a lot of times kids get the sniffles or whatever, and they don't. Their parents don't want them to go to school. Well, if they sign in online, they're marked absent because they weren't in the building.
Okay.
So it's like, and these poor kids, they can't win.
No. And Lordy.
They're even told, if you don't feel well, don't
school. Right. Oh, my word. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can understand as a parent, I know you can too, that jeepers, creepers, if you hear something and you tell no, I'm not sending him in today. I heard so-and-so's mom is sick or whatever. Nope, you stay home this week.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This is
this disease is insidious. I was just talking with the fire chief, Chief Sheehy in the villain, and he got it. And he got it because he was very good. He and his girlfriend were having Thanksgiving together, and they invited a neighbor over. Well, that was what did it. He had his neighbor over. The next thing you know, he's got it, his girlfriend's got it, and then his kids came to visit him, so now his kids have it.
Oh, boy.
And then it just goes on and on and on, and he feels awful. Physically, you know, he says, he's been dealing with this since the very beginning. I mean, they all the, especially public safety and medical workers have been dealing with this all along. And, you know, 99% of the time, people get better and, you know, they feel sick. It's like getting pneumonia, he said. You get better, but you come back. So it's, you know, it's just a problem. It's just an issue you got to deal with. But then it becomes a manpower issue, like in the schools, where if enough people are out or are quarantined because of this quarantine thing, which is different than having the flu or pneumonia, we never quarantine for that. The quarantine adds a whole other level of problems. I mean, when you quarantine if a kid in a classroom of, let's say, 10, 15 people gets the disease, or that teacher has it, is now exposed to all those kids, that whole classroom has to go into quarantine for 10 days. Or 14 days, or whatever they do.
Yeah.
So it's not just one or two people that it affects. I mean, it's really a widespread,
widespread
problem.
And, you know, I think that there's bad news and good news here, Bill, if you agree or disagree, because, you know, the bad news is that it seems to be growing, and it seems to be everywhere. After all this time. But the good news is that, okay, we have better testing. We know about it now. We know who has it now. And also, there are better treatments. As you mentioned, hopefully, like the fire chief, okay, he doesn't feel well, but he's going to be able to be okay because there are better treatments at this point.
Yeah. I mean, he's not hospitalized or anything like that. It's, but he knows people who are. So, I mean, everybody's different when they get sick. Everybody's bodies respond differently. So, you know, hopefully, knock on wood, he'll be fine, get through it after a week or two. And, but he knows other, you know, and I've known people who've ended up in the hospital. My family member of mine, her whole family got it, and they're all fine.
Good.
They tested positive. They had a few minor symptoms. And now they're all fine.
Excellent.
So everybody, like I said, everybody's different. Hopefully.
Well, I think it's really interesting, Bill, that we talk about a localized community, you know, Methuen, and yet there are really universal implications here about what you're reporting on, because everything you've said reflects on, I live in Gloucester, it reflects on Salem, Beverly, wherever we are, everybody's sort of experiencing the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I did a piece out of Andover, I think it was, let's see, what's the date? Ten days ago, I guess? Yeah. And this assisted living facility called Atrium Marlin Place,
mm-hmm.
they have a memory, impaired unit, and I think something like, I don't know, more than half of the residents of this memory impairment unit ended up getting it in the hospital.
Oh, wow.
So far, they've had 7 people have died there. And this just sort of came out of the blue, and everybody was sort of shocked by it. But it was sort of that where everybody sort of began acknowledging that we were into this second surge, or the second surge, which seems to be worse than the first surge at this point. At least it seems like it's zooming up more quickly than the first time around. But
yeah.
In any case, yeah, it's hitting all aspects of our communities.
All right, shifting gears, Bill, and again, Bill Kirk is a reporter for the Lawrence Eagle Tribune, and we encourage you to go to the Lawrence Eagle Tribune and check out all these stories that are in their archives, and even posted today and so on. What's the story with, I saw something about Methuen police or something around. Is there an audit going on or something?
Oh, yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff going on with the Methuen police. The latest is that the State Civil Service Commission is investigating the city. The Tribune has been covering this issue pretty much since it erupted in 2018, where the city really learned sort of simultaneously that the police superior officers union contract was fashioned in such a way that the captains and sergeants and lieutenants we're all making huge, huge salaries, between $200,000 and $400,000.
Oh, okay, yep.
Depending. And the city went to, in 2018 under Mayor DeJuga, whose son, by the way, was one of the officers involved in that contract. Since retired. He realized he couldn't fund the contract, and then the city council got involved, and so that contract's in mediation. Well, the inspector general did a big report about them, about the police department. I want to say last year, 2019, it must have been, and found that these raises were essentially illegal and were unsustainable and couldn't be done. So they're in mediation, but a big part of it, too, is looking at the police chief's involvement in hiring and promotional practices, and that's why the civil service now has launched its own investigation into the department to look at the hiring practices. I guess one of the things that used to happen was they had these things called intermittent officers. And intermittent officers are really only supposed to be used in times of extreme need. So you have, like the gas disaster, you might mm-hmm. get a bunch of intermittent officers to come in to direct traffic and man emergency posts and things like that. But they'd only be on for a, relatively short period of time. Well, there were intermittent officers that were there for years. That's one of the things that the civil service is looking into. How is it that these intermittent officers were getting these jobs? And the reason it's an issue, at least in the eyes of some city councilors, is that it's because the intermittent officers usually don't have the same level of training that a normal police officer has. They don't have full-time academy training. They haven't passed the written civil service exam, or they haven't scored very high on it, and yet they're getting preferential treatment over some officers who did score high on it.
Hmm.
And yeah, so there's a lot of sort of things that the civil service is going to be looking into. There's also an audit being done by an independent consultant that was paid for by the city. That's going on right now. The results of that should be out soon. And the city council just launched its own investigation. I guess under the charter, And this is true, I think, in Gloucester and most other cities. Under the city charter, a city council, if they invoke a certain, and I think what it's called a 211 investigation, if they invoke this 211 in their charter, they can subpoena people, they can demand documents, and they almost have, the jurisdiction of, of a prosecutor, where they can look into specific departments if they want to. So that's going on right now, too. It's just, and the Inspector General is supposedly, the funny thing about the Inspector General is that they don't have that much power. They have a lot of investigatory skills, and they wrote a scathing review of the police department about a year or so ago, but they don't have the power to prosecute. Usually what they do is they'll say, okay, here's our information, and they'll hand it over to, say, the Attorney General or the District Attorney or, Civil Service Commission or whomever. And since that report from the Inspector General came, or the Ethics Commission, since that report came out, none of those agencies have stepped up and done anything. And the Ethics Commission has issued a couple of sort of slap on the hand violations, no fines, just sort of opinions about things. And some of the city councilors who are sort of the reformers on the council are getting really frustrated. And so they were glad to see that the Civil Service Commission is at least one state agency that is taking a crack at this.
So this sounds like it's not going to be put to bed for a while, and it's pretty much a bone of contention in the town.
Oh yeah, a lot of people are kind of mortified that it just won't go away. It gets in the Boston papers as well as us. It gets on TV, NECN, WBZ.
Oh my, yep, yep.
Fox sometimes steps in on it, weighs in on it. The Globe has been covering it. The Globe's actually been covering it more extensively than except for us, than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Methuen resident, it's good and bad, because on the one hand, it raises the level of awareness. On the other hand, I think they're just sort of embarrassed a lot of times to see all these headlines. I mean, you know how it is.
Oh, yeah.
Gloucester got the headlines for the teen pregnancies there for a while, and that was just...
Oh, you had to bring that up, didn't you?
Jeez. That was just embarrassing, believe me, I know all about...
Well, what was embarrassing was how wrong the coverage was, and it just, mm-hmm. It was amazing.
That completely took on a life of its own.
Lordy mercy, but you're right, yeah, and it's tough. It's sort of like when you have a family issue, the family members can scream and argue, but leave it within the family type thing.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I get that. Holy cow, Bill! This is you're a busy man. We haven't talked in a while. I'm not gonna let this happen again. I'm gonna check in more often. Hopefully, at least once a month, if that's okay with you.
Sure. Yeah, that's fine.
I'm gonna do that because there's so much going on. You get kicked all around up there, so I got to keep up with you and see what's going on.
Right. There's a lot of stuff going on with the state. With the whole, with Biden and Trump, and I mean, there's just there's so many things happening right now in our country and our world that it's hard to keep track of it.
It is, and it's I think it's important to stay positive, and I think it's important to, in my opinion, Bill, I keep going back to this. There are more good people than there are bad. And so, that's a saving grace for me. But I know certainly on the North Shore. And it just strikes me that, you're looking at Methuen, really under a microscope. You're covering it so well and getting all these issues and stories out. But that could be in any town here in Massachusetts. I mean, it's just, everybody can identify with that. It's amazing.
Oh yeah, I think we've talked about this before too. It just goes to show the importance of local media and us doing our job so that people know what's going on. I mean, like we talked about before, Facebook is good for you know, people reporting on rumors, but rumors are one thing.
That's right.
Real news is something else.
We got to spend some time in that, because I had, in one of my classes that I taught teachers, Karen Andreas, the publisher of the paper, all the papers up there, in Eastern Mass. Karen was a guest lecturer, and she got right to the core on credibility and understanding what truth is and so on. And that's missing so much right now, and it's part of the great divide, I think, in this country. And I'm curious to see. I hope I live long enough to see how history treats this and how we get it in perspective and get it back to where it should be.
Yeah, I mean, you're a math teacher, so you're more engaged in probably in scientific inquiry than, you know, maybe some other people. And just sort of seeing the way this COVID vaccine has been politicized, and masks have been politicized, and I it just boggles my mind that anybody could even doubt that you know, masks work and vaccines work, and it's not political, and it's really, I don't know. I just hope people, I hope the president can sort of get everybody on the same page eventually, and we can sort of move past the sort of craziness.
In one of our talks, Bill, I hope upcoming, I mean, you had a guest on one time that was awesome. We talked, the three of us did, and you helped set me up with Mayor Rivera. But I think at some point it would be good to talk about how a paper like the Lawrence Eagle Tribune and all of the papers associated with it have such great reputations, the Salem News, the Gloucester Times, Newburyport Daily News, the Andover, and all of the papers have great reputations, but how they are being, what's the word I'm looking for? I want to say submarine, but how social media is making people doubt the veracity of newspapers. And very quickly, I'll finish this up here by saying it's one thing to be misquoted. That happens, especially back in the old days of pads and pens. Now we have recorders and so on, and we can transcribe. You can still misquote someone, but you get the story right. And to me, people, I remember, you know, back before social media came about, people would complain about being misquoted. But the idea, well, was the story correct? Were the facts correct? And the answer, 99 times out of 100, were yes. But they took, you know, they took a word out of context or so on. You know what I'm saying? So that's what people complained about then. But it's a whole different ballgame now.
Yeah, it is. I had a recent example of that myself, where a city councilor in Methuen, I quoted him in a story, and he put the story up on Facebook. And then he said, "I have to fact check this." and he ran down like three things, and one of which was that his name was misspelled. Well, it was obviously a typo.
Right, right.
Because I mean, I've quoted the guy a million times, and I haven't spelled his name wrong. But the fact checking that he was fact checking, the facts that he was checking, were fine.
Right.
I even posted onto the Facebook. I said, I did not get these facts wrong. And I think what he was trying to do was trying to emphasize something that I didn't emphasize.
Oh, well, yeah.
It's not
that
I got it wrong.
Right.
It was just
that, well, that's different.
He didn't like the way it was emphasized in the story.
But that.
So I texted him too. I said, hey, you know, I mean, tried to correct this on Facebook. I did not get the facts wrong. Well, he called me up and said, "Yeah, no, you're right." And we kind of went back and forth, and I and I'm not really that sensitive. If somebody calls me out, I think that's fine. They can let them call me out, but don't tell me I got the facts.
Well, that's what undermines your job, and that's what I'm talking about. And I had an incident a couple of years ago where I got the story right. It had to do with the fatality of a former colleague of mine, and there was something put up on social media that was 100% wrong. And I was worried because I know the family, and I said, "Oh my God, I published this. Did I get it wrong?" So I went back and talked to the sources at the police and fire departments, and they said, "No, the other story is wrong." So it's and you know what? The other thing too is, Bill, is people, a lot of people don't want to take the time to do the research now because so much stuff is out there. And it's like, okay, that fits with what I believe. I'm going to stick with that.
Right. Right.
So we gotta talk about this at some point, and I'm open to any kind of a forum that maybe you and some of the other guys, we can get together and have maybe a roundtable on this thing.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, I mean, I know Newburyport Daily News is doing something on truth in the media, maybe this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're always worthwhile to get people to watch, just to sort of help, you know, take the curtain. You know, move the curtain away. And
right.
See that the big bad, you know, Oz.
Well, I think it's so important.
Oz is not the Wizard of Oz at all.
And I think it's so important for our local media. I mean, you guys have been, the papers have been probably been hit the hardest. I mean, you guys can't publish twice a week now, and we got to get that back. So I think anything we can do to get people to understand how hard you work. And what's the other thing that's so funny is when people accuse you guys of making stuff up, it cracks me up because you don't have time to do that. You don't have time to do fiction. You're so working so hard on the facts.
Well, I always like to say, truth is stranger than fiction anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Why would I bother, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not like Stephen King sitting here writing a novel. I mean, I'm, you know, but it's so true. I mean, the stories that are out there are, you know, people overcoming adversity and or just the food insecurity that people, I wrote a story recently about food insecurity and it's the problem that's skyrocketing right now, because people don't have jobs, and Congress isn't stepping up and passing the kind of relief packages that they need to pass, and so people are going hungry. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff, that kind of stuff hasn't happened since the Great Depression.
Right.
And nobody really seems to be focusing on that. I mean, my God, I mean, that was back in the 20s, well, back in the 30s.
Yep.
I mean, there are a lot of hungry people out there. And I think we're moving toward that right now, and it's frightening.
I hope we can have a more fun discussion, although this has been very interesting. I appreciate it, Bill. And I think what I'll do is I'll get a hold of you before the year ends, because there's so much more to follow up on. But in the meantime, man, I really thank you for doing this. And for heaven's sakes, have a wonderful holiday season if you can, and be safe.
Yeah, you too.
All right, Bill, I'll check with you in a couple of weeks, okay?
Sounds good.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Bill. Take care.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. That is Bill Kirk, who is the Lawrence Eagle Tribune Eye in the Sky from the Merrimack Valley. He's the Eagle Eye on the Merrimack Valley. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Flashdown, New Hampshire. By the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.